Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we have a massive episode for you all here today as we are going to be talking about so many fun, electric things. First off, recapping UFC Vegas 103. We go 6-4 on predictions after we have three fight cancellations for the weigh-in show. I mean, that was pretty unfortunate, but 6-4. We start out the night 4-1 on the prelims. Predict the first three fights of the main card incorrect, but then we nail the co-main and main event, so it did end on a happy note. Also going to be talking about all the excitement that happened at WWE Elimination Chamber. It may have been one of the greatest premium live events I've ever watched from the WWE. It was insane. We're going to be talking about all the crazy things that happen. I'm sure if you don't know by now, but you should. John Cena is now a heel, which is insane. I never thought I would see the day. Also going to be talking about the final few episodes, the final season of Cobra Kai. It was phenomenal. It was fantastic. We have so many fun things to talk about on today's episode. But yeah, all things are good in life, guys. All things are good. We have a fun episode for you all here today to kick off your week. That's right. This is going to be dropping early Monday morning, I believe, depending on whenever I want to drop it. So without ado, I say we just get right on into it with some new UFC news, new UFC fights. As always, that's what we kick off every single episode with, except if we have a special guest. I guess usually that it would not be the case, but as usual, it is. So here are all the new fight announcements we've had over the last few days. First off, for UFC Des Moines in Des Moines, Iowa. Knew about this, but I guess it's now officially official. The number 7th ranked bantamweight in the world, Marlon Chito Vera, will be taking on the number 10 ranked bantamweight, Mario Bautista. Mario Bautista, 7 fight winning streak, coming off the biggest win of his career over Jose Aldo. A lot of people did not think he was victorious in that matchup. I thought he was victorious. That's just me. I guess not. As for Marlon Vera, I mean, it's been tough going for Marlon. He recently lost to, I want to say it was Davison Figueiredo, and Davison Figueiredo became the first man to ever drop him. Before that, I know he lost to Sean O'Malley. Other than that, who else has he done? He lost to Corey Sandhagen. It's just been a rough going for Marlon Vera. So I'll be interested to see how he looks in this matchup, because I'm going to pick Mario Bautista. I think Mario is definitely at a striking disadvantage in this, but certainly what his strategy is put you up against the cage, try and get some takedowns. And hey, if it worked against Jose Aldo, I think it will work for him against Marlon Vera. But that's a great matchup on UFC Des Moines on May 3rd. I think it'll be the co-main event right below Corey Sandhagen and Davison Figueiredo. So it should be exciting. It's just one of those matchups where, hey, you get to see Mario Bautista, you get to see Marlon Vera. We're happy about it. Here's one for you for UFC Qatar. That's right. The UFC is going to Qatar as of right now, May 17th. And this one isn't even the main event, but the number 7th ranked heavyweight in the world, Sergey Spivak, takes on the number 11th ranked Shamil Gaziev. Shamil Gaziev, 14-1 with 13 career finishes. Gotta love it. 3-1 the UFC. He's coming off a win over, was it Thomas Peterson? He got a knockout over. I think it was Thomas Peterson. He got a knockout over. But Shamil back in action. Love to see him. As for Sergey Spivak, I mean, tough outing last time for Sergey Spivak when he took on Halton Almeida, and of course, Halton Almeida ran right through him, but he didn't make it too easy, I would say. He held wins over Marcin Tybura, Derek Lewis, Tai Tuivasa. He's exciting. You never know what version of these fighters you're going to get, but the winner of this will be in the top 10, and the winner of this will probably be getting a top 6 opponent next, so good for them. That's a good fight on UFC Qatar. Another one for you for that UFC Des Moines card, bantamweight action as the number 15th ranked bantamweight, Montel Jackson finally back in action, 8-2 in the UFC, 14-2 professionally, coming off his dirty, 19-second knockout of Damon Blackshear. Finally in action as he takes on the 17-0 undefeated Daniel Marcos. Think of Marcos coming off a win over Adrian Yanez. A lot of people were counting him out. I wasn't. Look, Montel Jackson is tough opposition, and undefeated fighters have been dropping like flies. A little tongue twister there. So I'm definitely going to be riding with Montel Jackson in that one. But hey, Daniel Marcos, 17-0. Don't blink. If he wins this, 18-0 in the rankings, I would love to see it. Another one for you for UFC Vegas 106, May 31st. Oh, why do we keep going back to the Apex, guys? I'm sick of these UFC Apex cards. We have Zachary Reese back in action, 8-2 professionally, and he takes on Dusko Todorovic. Dusko managed to salvage his UFC career last time out with a win over goodness knows who. I also don't know. But he actually holds a win over Michelle Pereira on the independent scene. Jordan Wright, Mickey Padolo. He is about as average as you can get. Actually, no, he got beat by Mansoor Abdul-Malik. I have no idea, actually, how Dusko Todorovic is still in the UFC, now that I just remembered. But he's taking on Zachary Reese. Zachary Reese is 2-2 in the UFC, and he's 8-2 professionally. Joined the UFC undefeated, where he was shockingly, I'm trying to remember correctly where he suffered his first defeat, but I think it was he got head slammed finished by, I want to say, I cannot picture the name on who Zachary Reese lost to. It's going to come to me. Was it, I think it was Cody Brundage. I think Cody Brundage got a head slam finish of him, but I do know that he beat Julian Marquez and Jose Medina pretty handsomely. Gosh, I cannot remember. Zachary Reese, though, he's exciting, coming off a 20-second knockout of Julian Marquez, which, I mean, made him look way better, because after watching the Cody Brundage-Julian Marquez fight, we know how sloppy he is. But that'll be an interesting one. Probably be on the prelims. They might throw on the main card. Who knows? Here's another one for you. UFC 315 in Montreal, Quebec, Canada, May 10th. Navajo Sterling back in action already, 6-0 professionally, 1-0 in the UFC. He won his matchup at UFC 312 against, was it Tuco's? Or was that earlier? Was that UFC 311? One of the earlier cards this year. Navajo Sterling got the victory, and they already got him booked again, this time against the 14-4, making his second UFC appearance, Ivan Ersling. And Ivan Ersling lost a decision to Ion Kudalaba. We know his striking is good. This would be a telltale sign for Navajo Sterling. Undefeated fighters, not been looking the best, so I'll be curious to see how this one goes. And the final one we have, UFC 313. UFC 313, short notice. We'll be dropping our prediction for this later in the week. But featherweight matchup, as Chris Gutierrez will be taking on John Castaneda. John naturally fights at featherweight. Chris was like, hey, you know what? My opponent pulled out. John's opponent pulled out this past weekend. How about we do a matchup? So now Chris will be taking on John Castaneda at 145. John actually trains out of Minneapolis. And Chris Gutierrez, he's actually had a couple of UFC main events. He's been in the bantamweight rankings for a while. He is most famously the man who retired Frankie Edgar with a nasty knee knockout. Those should be a lot of exciting matchups. I'm excited for them all. UFC is on fire right now and is red hot, and I am loving it. Tell you something else that I was loving, and it was the final 5 episodes of Cobra Kai. That is right, guys. Cobra Kai, if no one knows, the hit show on Netflix, is basically a remake. It is a continuation of the Karate Kid storyline, of course, between Johnny Lawrence and, oh my gosh, LaRusso. LaRusso. What is LaRusso's first name? Johnny Lawrence. And I'm kicking myself for this. It's Johnny Lawrence and, oh my gosh, LaRusso. LaRusso. I'm going to, I can't. I gotta figure out his name. What is this? I am mind blanking so hard right now. This always happens. This always happens live on the podcast. It's going to come to me. Main cast Ralph Macchio as Daniel LaRusso and Johnny Lawrence. But of course, the final season, season 6, was broken up into 3 different parts, which I wasn't even aware of, totaling 15 episodes. And the season started off so red hot. Season 1, phenomenal. Season 2, phenomenal. Season 3, decent. Then season 4 and 5 kind of got lame, but season 6 has been cooking so far, and it ended with a bang. Of course, when we last discussed this, the Tekkai Sekai had ended. Oh, spoiler alert for everything that I'm about to say. So skip ahead to my Elimination Chamber thoughts before you get any of your Cobra Kai spoilers if you haven't seen the final season, if you will. But when we left off, part 2 ended, and of course, we had seen Quan die from falling on a knife, and it was shocking. It was shocking, such a good cliffhanger. So now we pick up, it's about a month later, and there's the funeral going on in South Korea. Basically, Kreese says he is done. He tells Sun Jun that Cobra Kai will not return to the Tekkai Sekai, and he goes off. And then you have Terry Silver, who's trying to get everyone to restart the Tekkai Sekai because he has cancer. He wants to, you know, go out with a bang, get one last win. He hates the Miyagi-Do and Cobra Kai. I don't know, but basically, the tournament gets put back on. Everything's exciting. And to end the first episode, Da-un, you know, the one hot Asian lady, the karate girl that, Chosen was hooking up with, who's with Cobra Kai, she basically kills her grandfather to take control of the dojo, thus ending her kind of storyline in the show. And then Kreese decides to head back to the valley to deal with unfinished business. It was a good returning episode. Not too many cliffhangers, but good enough to get going. Getting into episode 12 of 15, you know, Sakai Tekai, you know, they agree to have it take place. You know, Miyagi-Do will have home advantage here. And you're basically, they're trying to retrain Robbie for his match with Axel, you know, the big tall guy from the Iron Dragons who absolutely obliterated him to end the season. Super tall, super, and the second part, I guess it was, to end it. And they're trying to train him. You know, you got Hawk helping him and Dimitri, and that is all going on. And then basically, Sam reaches out to Tori and they're training together because Tori has a matchup in the finals against, was it Zara, who was like the one person that everyone hated, and everything is going on with that. Meanwhile, Johnny is trying to propose to Carmen, only to be interrupted when she goes into labor, and you have this really great moment. Johnny's old friend, who we had revisited in season one, who's the pastor, he gets them wedded, the baby is born, and it is such a feel-good moment. Then stuff starts to pick up even more, and what I like about these final five episodes is they build on one another, and it really just, you're building up to something. You're like, I don't know what it is. 13, all the dojos resume at the Tekkai Sekai. No one knows if Cobra Kai is even going to be there. Kreese shows up to Tori. They have kind of one last talk together, and he basically tells her that he has re-registered the dojo just so she can win, and he's basically apologizing for everything that he's done. Kreese also tries to apologize to Johnny. Johnny rejects him, kind of an emotional moment. Then, you know, Robbie and Axel, they go at it. Eventually it ends. Robbie wins. It is a phenomenal, phenomenal fight. And it's such a feel-good moment for Robbie. And you just can't be, help but be, oh no, oh my gosh, I'm completely thinking of this wrong. Robbie gets his knee completely broken by Axel. I can't believe I forgot already how this, I mean, I watched this yesterday. I kid you not. And I already forgot what happened. So in a very evil, twisted move by the Iron Dragons, Silver has whoever, there's some, the one evil fighter, the one like MMA fighter or whatever, what is his name? Armin Zakarian or whatever? No, not Armin Zakarian. What is his name? Who is the Iron Dragons head coach? Is it Dennis? Oh my gosh, there's so many characters in the show. It's like you recognize them, and I'm trying to find it, and we don't have it. Recurring, where is it? Is it Una or is it Devin? Anthony, Mitch, Chris, Bert. Guys, I tell you, they are just terrible with these. Feng Chao, that's his name. Sensei Wolf Feng Chao, played by Louis Tan. Louis Tan has also been in Mortal Kombat. He was Shatterstar in Deadpool 2. He was also in Deadpool and Wolverine. Gosh, he's actually been in a couple things. Good for him. But anyways, he orders the dirty hit, and basically, Robbie is no more. But you then see Sam withdraw for the female side, and all of a sudden, she's out, and you have what's-her-face, Tori, going to the finals to take on Zara. But then, this is where the big cliffhanger comes in, and oh, it is so good. You find out that Johnny and Kreese have reunited, and they have this, they're crying, they're hugging each other, and you know, Kreese is like, if there's anything I can last do to make up to Johnny before I go do one last thing in my life, what can I do? And Johnny goes, I think there's one thing. And in the end, you find out that Johnny has entered the Tekkai Sekai with Cobra Kai, with Miguel and Tori as his captains, and they're having Miguel fill in for Robbie, and they're having Tori represent Cobra Kai to take on Zara, and it goes so hard, you get so absolutely hyped, and you see the shock and just the fury on Silver and Terry Silver and Fang Chao or whatever, Sensei Wolf's faces. It was so hype. I tell you, it's just one of those moments you're like, this is going so hard. We get into the second to last episode, and it is so good. You know, don't get me wrong, I love the final episode so much. This one is so good. So you see Daniel LaRusso, you know, he buys out the old Cobra Kai dojo from the original seasons, and that's where I was thinking of Armin Zakarian, who had sold it to him. And then Johnny's training Miguel and Tori there. You know, Johnny's advising Miguel that, you know, everything he's been through, he should, you know, fight for himself, or, you know, just really motivating him, and they're showing flashbacks of the first season. It is just so emotional. In the finals, Cobra Kai's plan is to reduce the point gap between them and the Iron Dragons. And the first fight is, of course, the women's matchup. Zara easily wins the first round. Then Tori comes in. Robbie shares a kiss with her. It's all emotional. And she goes out and she whips Zara's butt and she knocks her tooth out. And it is just so badass. And I absolutely loved it. And the men's final, Miguel absolutely goes crazy, wins the first round against Axel. But then Axel starts to fight a little dirty. And eventually, when he has an opportunity, opportunity to break Miguel's spine, Axel refuses, and Miguel ends up winning the match. And disgusted with Wolf's cheating, Axel resigns from the Iron Dragon. So you see Miguel us all celebrating, and that's when you kind of find out that Cobra Kai and their dragons are actually tied. And the champion dojo match is decided by a matchup between the sensei. So they're setting up Feng Xiao, who is this badass MMA guy. He's the youngest guy to ever win the Tekkai Sekai against Johnny Lawrence. And Johnny's redemption arc in this show goes so hard, so unnecessarily hard. It is phenomenal. But that's not where it ends. You then fast forward, you move scenes where you have Terry Silver on his yacht plotting and ordering one of his henchmen to kidnap Carmen and her daughter to get into Johnny Lawrence's head. You then all of a sudden, you know, you see his henchmen go upstairs, and when all of a sudden you hear like fighting, his henchman falls down dead to the stairs. Silver goes up there, breaks a bottle, and up there is Kreese. Kreese and Silver one last time. They're fighting on the yacht. Kreese says he has to handle business, and Silver, he's choking him out. He has to kill him, and Silver, using his just iconic cigar, throws it on a gasoline tank that fell over, and the yacht blows up and killing them both, ending Silver and Kreese, but Kreese was able to go out one last time. Kreese's redemption arc. I mean, don't get me wrong, they brought him back at the end of season one. Insane, he's been such a good villain. And then this final season, they've kind of been going like, you know what, he wants to redeem himself. And he redeems himself in an amazing way. And I love that they kept Terry Silver as the villain. He was such a good villain. I absolutely love this. But guess what? There was one last episode to be had. X-Degenerate, it was called. And you have Johnny preparing for his fight against Sensei Wolf with Daniel and Chosen. Basically, you know, LaRusso is telling him, hey, you know, whether you win or lose, you already have family, you have things going for your life, don't be worried. But Johnny is just still so obsessed that, you know, back when he won in 83, you know, his mother was happy, she was proud of him, and she has since passed away, and he's done nothing with his life, and now this is his chance to redeem himself and become something. On the day of the fight, Wolf basically berates Johnny in the locker room and really gets in his head, and as Johnny tries to hit him, Wolf just basically shows him that he can break his arm at any point and says that he's going to do it in front of his family. The match takes place and starts off. Wolf just is running through Johnny. I mean, you can clearly see that he is weakening Johnny's performing some illegal moves. But then all of a sudden, Daniel gives Johnny a Cobra Kai style speech. And one thing I want to add is when they came out, you know, obviously you have Feng Chao walking out, Sensei Wolf, he's looking badass. You then have all the OG Cobra Kai people coming out. You have Daniel LaRusso in a Cobra Kai gi. I mean, he was looking so, so dope in the black. It was phenomenal. And of course, coming down to the final exchange of blows, and Johnny scores the winning point to proclaim Cobra Kai as the greatest dojo in the world. Phenomenal. I had to stand up and start clapping. Lexi was laughing at me, but I was like, you know what? I gotta let everyone know this is absolutely phenomenal. Fast forward a bit. Johnny, you know, he has a new house with Carmen, Laura is his daughter's name. Him and Carmen's daughter, who's named after his mother. You have Miguel, Sam, Dimitri, Hawk, Robbie, Tori, and Chosen all continuing their respective paths. A great way to end it. And then it ends with Johnny and Daniel collaborating with their students as senseis to train them in the dojo. And you have those two having one little set of banter to kind of end the show. And I just, you know, some shows, you know, I'm sad this is ending, but they ended it so well. I want so many other series to look how you end a show, because Cobra Kai successfully did it so, so well. I mean, 10 out of 10. 10 out of 10 on this final run, these final few episodes. I mean, break it into three parts is crazy. I don't know how what's going to be like for people when they go back and watch all 15, like, back to back, because I had to watch the first five, then the next five, then the next five, and oh my gosh, it's just so good. The emotions you feel, the music, just the vibes that the show gives off. It is phenomenal. I encourage everyone to watch it if you haven't. Cobra Kai Season 6, great way to end it. And hey, if you want to go through and watch this, I mean, you can easily get, 65 episodes out of this. You can watch a lot of episodes of Cobra Kai. Double thumbs up from me on the thumbs up scale, which isn't actually a thing, though maybe it could be a thing. Maybe the thumbs up scale is what I'm going to use for things now, but that's a whole different thing. Cobra Kai Season 6 has ended, is in the past. I'll tell you what else ended and is in the past, but I just can't get off my mind, and that is Elimination Chamber Toronto. It was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. You know, I don't know what I was expecting going in. It's like I knew it would be good. You know, I knew Elimination Chamber would be good, but I didn't know it would be that freaking good. So, Elimination Chamber, of course, going down in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. I had Lexi and Ryan watching it. And then for the main event, I was able to get a couple more of the boys over. And it was a great time. It was a great time. 38,493 people in the Rogers Center. The crowd was buzzing. This was a great crowd. Much better than the Royal Rumble crowd. I want to say that right off the bat. This was a great, great crowd. Kicking off the night, your Elimination Chamber match for a Women's World Championship opportunity at WrestleMania 41 against Rhea Ripley or Io Sky, because they're actually having a match on Monday Night Raw, which will be March 3rd, if you guys already know the result. But the winner of that is taking on the winner of our Women's Elimination Chamber, which was Bianca Belair. But before we can even get going, you follow the first two women starting us off, Liv Morgan and Naomi. You have the return of Jade Cargill. And Jade Cargill is just, you know, she's the future. She's the future. She has the look. She has the skills. She just has the aura, as the kids call it, to be a future world champion in the WWE. And she comes in, and you think she's going to attack Liv Morgan, and she attacks her former friend Naomi, who we are led to presume is the one who attacked her. Maybe it was Bianca Belair, but it was absolutely crazy. Jade Cargill takes her out right off the bat. She's eliminated. You then get going. You have Alexa Bliss. She's waiting. Finally, you have, I want to say it was, who came in next? It was Alexa. Was it Alexa Bliss who came in against Liv Morgan next? I don't know. Roxanne Perez came in. Bayley came in. It was a great time. Some good eliminations all around. You had all five women out there before you had your first pinfall, which was Bayley being eliminated by Liv Morgan and just hitting it. One of her typical was her finisher. She goes up against the rope, slams her face down. It was good. You then have, what's her face? Roxanne Perez being eliminated with Alexa Bliss doing was it air to Bliss? She does like a backflip off the top rope. You then are down to Alexa Bliss, Liv Morgan, Bianca Belair, and Alexa Bliss is shockingly eliminated by Liv Morgan, giving us Liv Morgan. Bianca Belair, gonna be honest, I thought they were gonna do Liv Morgan. Good finish. You have Alexa Bliss, or not Alexa Bliss, Liv Morgan being countered on the ropes. Bianca Belair hits her nasty finisher, which was ironically the finisher I made for myself when I used to fake do WWE when I was little. My wrestler name was Z-Meister T. I had a name for my finisher, but I can't even remember it, but it was basically like what Brock Lesnar and John Cena do when they pick them up on their shoulders, but instead they're the opposite way, and then you slam them between your legs. I mean, I absolutely love it. Bianca Belair wins this in a 29-15 minute match, and she will go to WrestleMania. You kind of have a little stare down between her, Rhea Ripley, and Io Sky. I could see them doing a triple threat match. I could also just see them straight up doing Bianca Belair, Rhea Ripley. I think that's going to work. I just don't know what the whole Jade Cargill, Naomi outcome of everything's going to be. I'm very curious, but I think you continue Rhea Ripley with her reign. I mean, don't get me wrong, WWE is super unpredictable right now, but I just kind of feel like there's not really, like, I feel like Jade Cargill's the next woman, maybe even Alexa Bliss to, like, win the big belt, so I don't know if necessarily giving it to Bianca Belair is going to do anything for her, but Rhea Ripley's on fire right now. Her versus Bianca Belair would be great, but maybe if Io Sky wins, Io Sky versus Bianca Belair. We'll have to see. This wasn't the best Women's Elimination Chamber match. Last year's was better. I mean, don't get me wrong, there were some good spots in this, but it was just kind of slow. And it kind of reminded me of the Women's Royal Rumble, where it's just, we have two other matchups we're looking forward to, where we want to get past that. And similar to the Royal Rumble, this is almost like giving shades, like literally almost oddly similar. You have a women's tag match here, which just, I mean, it wasn't bad. You know, I'm not complaining about it. Of course, Tiffany Stratton and Trish Stratus win against Nia Jax and Candice LeRae. The pop for Trish Stratus was good. Tiffany Stratton is a star. 11 minutes and 40 seconds this went on. But it was just like the Royal Rumble. You know, the match isn't bad, but we just want it to be over. We want it to be over because we have two other matchups we're looking for. Similar to the Royal Rumble, you have Kevin Owens, Cody Rhodes, and then the Rumble, you have Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, and then you have the Elimination Chamber match for the men. So, Tiffany Stratton, Trish Stratus win. Look, I heard people saying that you should have done Trish Stratus versus Tiffany Stratton for the belt. I agree, but, I mean, Tiffany Stratton looks good. She'll be taking on Charlotte Flair at WrestleMania. I don't know the plans for Nia Jax and Candice LeRae, but they have a good filler role. We then get to the second to last match of the evening. Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, 27 and a half minutes of perfection. The match built so many close finishes. I'm going to be honest, I had no idea who was going to win. I picked Kevin Owens. I thought it would be Kevin Owens. Lo and behold, it was Kevin Owens. And just brutal. Just brutal. Kevin Owens was at one point using a steel chair covered in barbed wire to beat down Sami Zayn, and then Sami Zayn reversed it, and then he's beating down Kevin Owens, and then you have just them going across the whole arena. They did this really bold move where, you know, they did this in an unsanctioned match, which they really played up here, and you just had, like, the lights dim. The spotlight was always on the wrestlers wherever they were moving, which was an interesting choice. I wasn't complaining for my sake on TV, but maybe so for people in the stadium. I don't know if it was a bit weird for them. I mean, it was a great match, though. I mean, this is, you know, I think Cody Rhodes versus Kevin Owens was better, but if Cody Rhodes versus Kevin Owens is a 5-star, this is a 4.8 star. I mean, this match was phenomenal. You saw the storytelling. You felt the emotion. I mean, these are two best friends. Like, these two were at each other's weddings, and you have them going to war here, and eventually it ends Kevin Owens putting Sami Zayn away, and then after the match, attacking him, injuring him, and then out of nowhere, I didn't think we'd get multiple returns on one evening, but Randy Orton comes out, and oh my goodness, he just had so much aura. So much aura. I mean, that's all what WWE is. You know, people talk about aura nowadays. That's what wrestlers have. Randy Orton's coming out. He is 45 years old, looking jacked, looking hungry, and he gets in there, and he's whooping Kevin Owens' butt, and he goes to hit the spear, and I'm so glad the commentary referenced this, is because they had a bunch of fake security guards out there, and the security guards couldn't stop Kevin Owens from putting Sami Zayn down onto the concrete with a pile driver, but they're able to stop Randy Orton from booting, doing the classic punt, which was getting the crowd so buzzing on Kevin Owens. And then just a phenomenal comedic sense, Randy Orton hits like 4 RKOs on all the random security guards where you'd probably just like up and coming, like wannabe wrestlers, which I absolutely love. And it was a great moment there. But there was just like this one moment where Randy Orton's coming out to confront Kevin Owens, and you can see Kevin Owens crying because he didn't want to do what he did to Sami Zayn, but he felt he needed to. And that is what I absolutely love. This is storytelling. This is cinema. It was fantastic. And it was at this moment where we learned that we weren't getting the Cody Rhodes and Rock segment before the Chamber, which really threw everyone off guard. I mean, all of us were kind of confused. I was seeing everything on Twitter. Everyone was kind of like, that's an odd choice, but we'll see how it plays out. We get things going. You obviously have Drew McIntyre kicking things off. You have Damian Priest, Logan Paul's in there, and we elect to start with Seth Rollins. And I want to say it was Drew McIntyre. Seth Rollins and Drew McIntyre got us going. CM Punk was in the pod. John Cena coming out got a huge pop. Huge pop, John Cena. Little did we know this would be the final time we saw John Cena in a good guy phase. So, kicking things off. I mean, you get things going. You eventually have Seth Rollins going at it with Drew McIntyre. Then Damian Priest gets involved. And I'm not going to say it was slow, but it's just kind of your run-of-the-mill. They're filling in stuff. Logan Paul comes out. He's super entertaining. Then I have CM Punk coming out. You have John Cena coming out. It was great. First elimination is actually Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre is eliminated by Damian Priest. You then have Damian Priest being eliminated by Logan Paul. And then in fantastic, you know, basically a fantastic moment, CM Punk eliminates Seth Rollins, CM Punk eliminates Logan Paul, which was such a feel-good moment because I do not care for Logan Paul. Final three are CM Punk, Seth Rollins, and John Cena. You then see CM Punk and John Cena, all of them going at it. You then see Seth Rollins be eliminated by CM Punk with a go to sleep, leaving us with our final two, CM Punk, John Cena, which means one of these two was guaranteed to go to the main event in WrestleMania. I think everyone agreed they could have gone either way. We would have been happy. But what they elect to do, first off, great like little 2-3-5 minute session of just John Cena and CM Punk wrestling, countering each other, kicking out of pinfalls. Loved it. Loved it every single moment. You have CM Punk being curb stomped by Seth Rollins, and immediately after Seth Rollins does it, by the way, Seth Rollins is eliminated, John Cena locks in a go to sleep, and CM Punk passes out, and John Cena wins the Chamber. So, before we get into John Cena, before we get into this whole angle, I'm very interested to see what they're setting up, because people keep bringing up that CM Punk, he has a favor with Paul Heyman. We don't know if they're going to do CM Punk, Roman Reigns versus Seth Rollins, if they're going to run back CM Punk and Seth Rollins, if they're going to do Seth Rollins versus Roman Reigns and CM Punk is somehow involved. I don't know. I kind of think they're setting up Drew McIntyre, Damian Priest to an extent. As for Logan Paul, I don't know who he's going to be matched up with for WrestleMania, but he'll be involved to some extent. But in my opinion, they're setting up CM Punk versus Roman Reigns versus Seth Rollins, which could even be they book Roman Reigns versus Seth Rollins, and CM Punk goes, put me in this match. But it seems like we might get a Damian Priest, Drew McIntyre feud at WrestleMania. We'll have to see. John Cena, is then crowned your champion. John Cena is the winner, and he's celebrating. He's all happy. Cody Rhodes' music hits, and everyone's kind of like, oh, we're getting right on into this. We're getting right into it. We're getting right into it, wasting no time. Cody Rhodes comes down. He's shaking John Cena's hand. It's a happy moment. Then The Rock's music hit, and The Rock's music immediately after hitting transitions into Feed, and out walks Travis Scott, and right behind him comes The Rock, Dwayne Johnson. And oh, they looked so cool. They looked so cool. They were looking so cool. And they, you know, they come out. Their entrance is phenomenal. You got Travis Scott just lingering in the background like this dark entity, like this henchman, like The Rock's evil sidekick. Like, he really gave that persona off. And even with The Rock, you could just kind of tell his appearance was darker. His appearance was darker, and the whole idea is that he wanted Cody Rhodes' soul. He wanted him to become sort of like what Seth Rollins did to Triple H, what Steve Austin did to Mr. McMahon at WrestleMania 17, what Hulk Hogan did to WWE, basically selling out to WCW. That's what this was. And you have this moment, The Rock is going, Cody, I want you. I need you. Join me, Cody. And Cody Rhodes goes, you want my soul? Well, it belongs to this ring, to all these fans. So, Rock, go fuck yourself. And oh my gosh, the crowd went nuts. I went nuts. I'm like, there's no way that Triple H just let an F-bomb drop on WWE television from his number one guy. It was amazing. It was amazing. John Cena's clapping for him. He brings him into a hug. He's going, Cody Rhodes, you're the man. And then John's face looks up when he's hugging Cody Rhodes. And you see literally the excitement, the joy that is always on John Cena's face drain from it. I mean, truly, truly a great performer right there. The Rock holds up two fingers, draws them across his throat, points it at a gun, does it. John Cena shoves Cody Rhodes away and kicks him right in the groin. And we get a John Cena heel turn before WrestleMania. You're going to have a heel John Cena at WrestleMania. And I pray that John Cena is at Monday Night Raw April 7th when it's live in Minnesota. And I'm going to be there in attendance. I really hope so. You then have like a 10 to 15 minute beatdown of John Cena just destroying Cody Rhodes. And first off, credit to Cody Rhodes. Like, he does not need to take all this punishment. He does not need to take all this punishment to get the storyline across. But similar to what he did last year with The Rock and Roman Reigns, he is willing to put his body on the line. You have Travis Scott punching him in the head. You have The Rock slapping him with the belt. You have John Cena just beating him with the belt, beating him with a mic, beating him with everything he has on him. It was incredible. It was incredible. You then have this just, there's so many multiple cool photos they took, but the first of two that really stand to me, there's an image of The Rock with John Cena, and John Cena has his head on Cody Rhodes, or John Cena has his foot on Cody Rhodes' face. You then have, Travis Scott in the background as well. Then as they're walking up the entryway, you have smoke coming out. You have those three just looking out. They just look like a trio of three of the baddest mofos on the planet. I have no idea what WWE's planning, but right after the credits roll, you kind of have, like, all you could really call it is, like, this end credit scene of Cody Rhodes getting up, and he's beaten, he's confused, and what I've seen a lot of people pointing out is there were signs to John Cena's turn, and WWE always teases this long term, but I think they were kind of just waiting to see if it was the right time to pull the trigger. They were also saying how Cody Rhodes was noticing that no one came to his defense. You know, Cody Rhodes notorious for helping Jey Uso, Cody Rhodes notorious for helping Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Randy Orton, but no one came to Cody Rhodes' defense, which I think is going to make him a little paranoid. I've seen people talk about that. I would love that angle. This was incredible. This was incredible. Your main event as of right now, WrestleMania 41, your official main event, Cody Rhodes versus John Cena for the Undisputed WWE Championship, and John Cena is a villain. I love it. I love it. And you could have done John Cena versus Cody Rhodes naturally, but this has just changed the ball game. This has changed the ball game. And, WWE's just gotten better at this. WWE's gotten better at this. WrestleMania feels different. Since the pandemic, WrestleMania feels different. Now, you can kind of go back through history, you know, since I started watching. You know, I still think that The Rock versus John Cena 1 was massive. You obviously have their rematch was good. I mean, you also have WrestleMania 30, which was phenomenal. 31, you have the moment with Seth Rollins. We're actually going to be going through and ranking every single WrestleMania main event. We're going to be doing that later on when WrestleMania gets much closer. It's probably late March, early April we're going to be doing that. But just going through them all, I mean, 32, 33, 34, 35, you have this rough patch. 36, 37, 38, you have Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar in the biggest WrestleMania match of all time. They're working with it then. Then WrestleMania 39, you know, Cody Rhodes versus Roman Reigns felt really big last year. actually was the greatest WrestleMania main event of all time. This year, they have just made this road to WrestleMania feel so special. So special. And they're going to load up these WrestleMania cards. It's going to be phenomenal. But it is going to be must-see because, I mean, we don't know if they're going to have John Cena win the belt here. Because in my opinion, they have John Cena lose to Cody Rhodes and then he kind of goes on this redemption arc throughout the rest of 2025 where he tries to earn back the fans' trust, where he tries to earn back the locker room's trust and goes, I was hungry, you know, I had lust, I had greed for this 17th World Championship that I decided signing with The Rock was the best decision. But he wants to earn it back before he can actually win it. Now, there's also the other thing where they just have a heel John Cena win the 17th in the main event WrestleMania. I don't know. It's phenomenal. Elimination Chamber, better than the Royal Rumble. And let me just tell you, these have been two of the most shocking premium live events that WWE has ever done to open a show. We have 7 weeks until WrestleMania. I cannot wait to see what occurs. But, ladies and gentlemen, I do know what else occurred, and it was at UFC Vegas 103, and out of the three things we've talked about on today's episode, you know, Cobra Kai, Elimination Chamber, and now UFC Vegas 103, this was obviously the least big of the three, okay? It wasn't the most exciting. It was your run-of-the-mill Apex event, and interesting moments all around. So let's talk about it. Let's discuss it and give our thoughts on all of the fights. So kicking things off, you of course had what was supposed to be Montana De La Rosa, Leanna Carolina. That was canceled. You then get into Charles Johnson versus Ramazan Temeryov. And, you know, Charles Johnson was ranked number 12 in the men's flyweight rankings. And Ramazan Temeryov wins a unanimous decision over him. 29-28 across the board. Good win for Ramazan Temeryov. Ramazan extending his win streak to 11 straight fights. The man from Uzbekistan gets the nod. 55 significant strikes to 66. Charles Johnson actually had more. 87 total strikes for Charles to 59 for Ramazan. 1 of 2 on takedowns for only 23 seconds of control time. So round 1, Ramazan outstruck him. He takes that round. Round 2, Ramazan outstrikes him again. He takes that one. Round 3, Charles outstrikes him 37-15, but Ramazan does land a late takedown. So it was kind of Ramazan won round 1, 2, and then Charles wins round 3. So it was close, it was competitive, but Ramazan walks away with the victory. And now 2-0 in the UFC, 2-0 in the UFC, and he's only 28 years old. Good stuff for Ramazan Temeryov. I don't know what's next for him. Personally, you know, he's going to be ranked number 12. You could give him another veteran in Tim Elliott. You could have him fight, I mean, Asul Mabayev now. I personally like an Alex Perez at number 7. I think Alex Perez versus Ramazan Temeryov would be perfect. If I could book that, that's what I would do. For Charles Johnson, he's going to be ranked number 13 come tomorrow. That's in my humble opinion. I think him versus Kaya Sakura. Him versus the winner of Joshua Van and Ray Tesoura, which is coming up. That could be a fight you do. Even Charles versus Bruno Silva or, I mean, someone else at flyweight. There's a lot of options, but it was an okay fight to open up the night. This does snap Charles Johnson's four-fight winning streak, which kind of sucks, but hey, Ramazan knew what he needed to do, got it done, and even though he lost the third, all you got to do is win the majority of the rounds you have. Good win for Ramazan. The odds were minus 110. There was no underdog victory here. Following that, we had our first incorrect prediction of the night as J.J. Ulrich beat Andrea Lee, and Andrea Lee didn't retire, but she might as well. She might as well. Look, I didn't watch this. I'm glad I didn't watch this. Zero excitement all around. So, totals from the fight, 74 significant strikes to 53 in favor of J.J. Ulrich. She outstruck her every single round. Total strike, 77-66. Two takedowns for J.J. One for Andrea Lee. A minute 20 was the max time that you had for control time. It was just your run-of-the-mill woman's fight. I mean, Andrea is outstruck every single round. J.J. barely gets the nod. Good for her. J.J. Ulrich back in the win column is now 3-1 in her last four. Good for her. Mind you, she has just been a decision machine in the UFC. She is 14-7. 14-7, 32 years old. There's going to be options. There's going to be so many options for her in the women's, gosh, what does she fight in? Women's flyweight, I think it is, women's flyweight. There's tons of fights for her. I mean, that I honestly don't, she's not that entertaining. I wouldn't be surprised if they even cut her, but they might keep her. Good win for J.J. Ulrich. Just remain relevant. As for Andrea Lee, make it her sixth straight defeat, all of them coming by decision. Just downward spiral for Andrea Lee. She's now 13-11, and there was actually 1 point in her career. Crazy enough. There's 1 point in her career that she was 11-2. She has actually dropped her last 9 of last 11 matchups. Okay, of her last 11, she's dropped 9 of them. So tough way to end her UFC run. They got to cut her whenever they cut her. But Andrea Lee, you were once in the rankings, and you are now losing to JJ Aldridge. Embarrassing. We will pass on that one for sure. Following that, close matchup at featherweight as Danny Silva picks up the split decision win over Lucas Almeida. Danny Silva extending to 4 straight wins. Good stuff for the kid, and he's now 2-0. In the UFC, what more could you ask for from the 28-year-old from California? He was the favorite for a reason. Totals from the fight, Danny Silva, 82 single man strikes to 74 in favor of him. 85 total strikes to 78 to 1 of 3 on takedowns for 49 seconds of control time. Tail of the fight here, Danny wins round 1, Danny wins round 2, Lucas wins round 3. Pretty similar to that fight we saw earlier with Ramazan and Charles. But in this case, it was a much closer round 2, so Lucas was given kind of a nod at times. People thought he might be able to win. Nonetheless, Danny Silva getting it done. So Danny Silva, he will improve to 2-0 in the UFC. As for Lucas Almeida, this will be his, 3rd loss in the UFC. He's 2-3 in the UFC, 1-3 in his last 4. Ooh, I don't know, Lucas. I don't know. This may be your final time in the UFC. We'll have to see, but it's been a mid-run. Mid-run at best. For Danny, William Gomez lost. We're going to mention him in a bit. That could be a fight you do. There's tons of featherweights. There's literally so many featherweights. I mean, they could do Danny Silva, Pat Sabatini. They could do Danny Silva, Hakeem Dawodo. I mean, they could bring in guys, drop down guys. There's just so many options. And hey, we just talked about that they're going to do John Castaneda versus Chris Gutierrez. I don't know if Chris Gutierrez is going to make it a permanent stay at 145, but the winner of that versus Danny Silva, I think that would be a very competitive matchup. Good stuff. We predicted it correctly. What more can you ask for? The next one up, here's why we're not mentioning the winner of this, because you got Ricardo Ramos and Chepe Mariscal. And Chepe Mariscal is now just an outstanding 5-0 in the UFC, and he's looking at the rankings. Chepe Mariscal, getting him a ranked opponent. I mean, make it 30-27 across the board, 85 single man strikes at 37, 2-5 on takedowns for 2 minutes and 35 seconds of control time. Chepe just shows there are levels to this against Ricardo Ramos. Ricardo Ramos never had a prayer. You actually had one of the most dominant round 2s I've seen, 42 significant strikes to 8. Ricardo Ramos made the round 3 a bit closer, but this was Chepe Mariscal in his prime. Chepe picks up the decision win. I mean, what a dog. What a dog. 8 straight victories. The man from Colorado is the minus 615 favorite for a reason. Look, he's not going to be in the rankings come the update on Tuesday, but you got Calvin Kattar at number 14. You got Giga Chikadze at number 11. Book this man in the rankings. I think the Calvin Kattar fight is perfect for both of them. Calvin Kattar can actually fight a striker for once, not a grappler. But actually, Chepe can mix in the grappling. But Chepe should be in the rankings. He is so exciting. He is so excited. He's truly going out there to finish the fight. This dude's in his post-fight interview, and he's going, guys, I'm sorry. I really wanted to go out there and get the finish. My bad. Like, Chepe, you ain't gotta apologize to me. You are an absolute warrior. For Ricardo, 1-3 in his last 4. Kind of been boring as of late. Last win was over Josh Cuiabo in 2024, and he was just cut. I don't know. Lucas Almeida just lost. You could do Ricardo Ramos, Lucas Almeida. Tough to say what'll happen, but this belongs to Chepe Mariscal. He was a stud here. Then got into the final men's prelim of the night. The final prelim of the night. What am I saying? There were no more women's fights, thankfully. But you got Mario Pinto taking on Austin Lane. And I don't know, Abdulrazak Al-Assad and Cesar Almeida. I think I have a new KO of the year, personally, as Mario Pinto moves to an impressive 10-0. Good stuff for Mario Pinto as the 26-year-old gets his 6th career knockout, 7th career finish over Austin Lane. And I mean, this was gritty. This was a gritty, gritty win. Round 1, Austin Lane, 20 significant strikes to 7, actually dropped Mario Pinto with a pretty run-of-the-mill punch. And, you know, it was kind of looking like, here we go, another newbie in the UFC, another undefeated fighter is joining, and he's going to do nothing with this opportunity. But then, round 2, you know, Austin Lane's landed a bit more, but all of a sudden, Mario just clips him. And he's going backwards. Then he hits him with a 1-2, and on that 2 coming in, he clips Austin Lane. Lights go out. Austin's out cold. Mario Pinto goes to land in a follow-up punch of the ref. Dives in just in time to save Austin Lane's chin. Mario Pinto, welcome to the UFC. We need heavyweights like Mario Pinto. Let me tell you, you go out there, you get a knockout like that. I mean, I'll give him Kenny and Chukwe at 14. I'm going to be honest. I'll give him someone in the UFC rankings just like that. Great work from Mario Pinto. Happy to see it, too. Happy to see it. He has an English accent for sure, so he wants to fight on the London card, but I doubt they'll find an opponent for him. I mean, they could give him Thomas Peterson or something, maybe in Iowa. I know Thomas Peterson's from Minnesota, so I'm sure he'd be game to fight in Iowa. But Mario Pinto, I think, is one more fight away from a ranked opponent, and if they don't cut Justin Taffa or Junior Taffa, they could have one of those two fight this guy. But Mario Pinto, 26 years old, 10-0, an absolute stud. Happy with his performance. As for Austin Lane, I mean, six knockout loss. He's now sitting at 1-4 with a no contest in the UFC. Yeah, Austin Lane's time in the UFC may be done. But hey, if they're keeping Justin and Junior Taffa, maybe have one of those guys fight Austin Lane. Oh, they already did. So, Austin Lane, I'm sorry, 37 years old. You know, you made it to the UFC. You were able to get some highlight reels here and there, but I think his time is sadly over. So, Austin Lane, to regional MMA you go, or even retirement. As for Mario Pinto, the rankings will soon await you. With that, we got into the main card, and kick it. Guys, one of the worst main cards I've had all year. 0-3 to start the night. I do want to say something. I think that Esteban Rivix has to have some of the worst luck with decisions. I truly believe that. But kicking off the card, Sam Patterson, Danny Barlow. Not all the undefeated fighters can win. Not all the undefeated fighters can win. And Danny Barlow, unfortunately, proved that. And, you know, it's just there's levels to the UFC. There's levels to UFC, and you get Sam Patterson taking on Danny Barlow. And Sam Patterson is not known for his hands. None whatsoever. Sam Patterson has 4 knockouts of his 11 career finishes, and you got to make it 5 now. Because he put Danny Barlow's lights out 3 minutes into round number one. For Danny, first career loss, snaps his 9-0 undefeated streak. That's just tough. There's nothing to even say to this, man. I mean, Sam Patterson put on the pressure, 18 stiffened strikes to 15. He clipped Danny once. He was up against the cage, and then he just lands a solid punch right in the center of his face. Danny goes out cold. Ref has to jump in right away. Great work for Sam Patterson. I love it, man. How about that? 3 straight wins, 3 straight round one finishes. And there's a dude who was knocked out, and you're kind of like, oh my gosh, is Sam Patterson done for? Heck no, he's not. He was a plus 240 underdog. The underdog's cashing in here. Now, not ready for a ranked opponent, but you got Randy Brown action out there. I saw his name being thrown around. You can even throw out a little Santiago Ponzinibbio. You got tons of welterweights out there. Welterweight's one of the biggest rosters in the UFC. I'm happy for him, truly. Sam Patterson, he'll be back. He'll be getting a better ranked guy, probably. Maybe someone like Vicente Luque, even. I would even throw at him. We'll have to see it. Kevin Holland, we'll have to see. But Danny Barlow, yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. They'll bring Danny Barlow back because 9-1, I mean, you lost to a guy in Sam Patterson who's been doing pretty good. They're not going to cut him, but they're probably going to severely kind of assess what is the skill level Danny Barlow can fight to. So, in my opinion, Danny Barlow will be fighting someone much lower. Sam Patterson will be fighting someone much higher. It was still entertaining nonetheless. After that, Hyder Emil, William Gomez. I do not understand the MMA math, how William Gomez can beat Joe Anderson Brito, yet lose to Hyder Emil. I don't know how it works, but Hyder Emil plus 165 ends William Gomez's 12-fight winning streak. Hyder Emil improves to 11-0, and he's 3-0 in the UFC. Good stuff for him. I mean, there's not much to say. At featherweight, great stuff for him. I would book him against someone like Jonathan Pierce personally, maybe the loser of Danny against Sean Woodson. But I mean, guys, 30, what is he at now? 34 years old, 11-0 in his prime. Good win here. Good win here for Hyder Emil. For William, tough loss. Oh, really tough loss. 115 significant strikes to 101, 164 total strikes to 116, and lands 1 of 6 takedown attempts. William outstruck him in round 1, round 2, but round 3 was just so strong. So strong from Hyder Emil. Bias-wise, I had it 2-1 for William Gomez, but I mean, when it's as close as this, you just can't really complain at all, so. Both of these guys will be back. I mean, we're forgetting that. What's his face? William Gomez is only 27 years old. 27 years old. 14-3. Still a very good record. These guys will be back. And look, there's going to be a loser of Bryce Mitchell and Gene Silva. How about the loser of that? We can have William Gomez face someone like that. But for Hyder, I personally like the Danny Gashon Woodson loser. Someone of that caliber. Should be exciting. Good win for Hyder Emil. I mean, I just always hate predicting fights incorrectly. It really irks me, which brings me into my next one. Dude, it was close. And I'm okay with Nasrat getting the nod, but it's just watching it. I thought Esteban I thought Esteban had his number. 147 Seaman strikes, 135 in favor of Esteban. 149 Toll strikes, 135 in favor of Esteban. One takedown landed from Nazar in the high pops round. Round one, 36 Seaman strikes, 33. This was a close round. Came down to round one. I gave it to Esteban. That's how I saw it. Round two, clear Esteban. 62 Seaman strikes, 49. Clearly. Round three, Nazar landed 53 cinnamon strikes compared to 49 for Esteban. Also went 1 of 5 on takedown attempts. I thought Esteban should have been rewarded more for defending than he should have for being taken down once. That's just my humble opinion. But Esteban Rivovic, I mean, this dude is 3-2 in the UFC, and he's had two fight of the nights back to back. Truly, I tell you, it's just tough luck. Tough luck for Esteban. And it's a loss like this which sets him back at lightweight, which was what really sucks for me. There's a multitude of guys at lightweight that you could fight. It's not going to be anyone in the rankings right now, but Chase Hooper, if he loses to Jim Miller, you could do Chase Hooper versus Esteban Rivovic. You could do Esteban versus Trevor Peak versus Charlie Campbell. I mean, there's tons of options out there. I really like all of them. Chepin Mreskel. He'll probably stay there. Mauricio Rufi and Bobby Green, maybe the loser of that. We'll have to see. As for Nazrat, I kind of want to give a ranked opponent. In my opinion, Nazrat Haqparastrad is on a 5-fight win streak, coming off a fight of the night. I think he deserves a little reward. Now, as for who he could fight at men's 155. You got Benoit Saint-Denis at 15. He's got a fight coming up. Grant Dawson at 14 doesn't have a fight. Jalen Turner at 13. He's got one. Called out Moicano. I don't think they're going to have Moicano fight that far down, but I kind of like the Grant Dawson fight. I saw someone on Instagram bring that up. I think it was MMA Theory. It's where I got a lot of my information from. I would not be mad about that. So, fight of the night. Is it my fight of the year? Probably not. I think Mirabad Ubar is going to be a tough one to even get over. I mean, even Cody Steele versus Rong Zhu is going to be second place for me right now. But, hey, good fight compared to some of the decisions we saw on here. As for the final two, very good. Very good stuff for our co-main and main event. I mean, they were not given much momentum to work with, and they did what they had to do. Cody Brundage knocks out Julian Marquez in round one. Cody Brundage, 6th career knockout, 9th career finish. I have no idea how Cody Brundage manages to stay in the UFC. He's 11-6 now. I don't know how he manages to do it, but he does. I mean, props to him. Props to Cody Brundage. First win since 2023. Yikes, been a fat minute. For Julian Marquez, he'll end his UFC run, getting finished 4 times in a row, all of them by knockout. Very tough stuff. He retired in the cage. They didn't even give him any moment. Goodbye to the lovely Julian Marquez at 34 years old. As for Cody, I mean, I don't know what to do with this man. It's going to be interesting. With 15 seconds left in this round, Cody was able to land the knockout punches. And Julian really, they had a moment where they could have stopped this. Julian had Cody so hurt. And then they both lost their mouth guards. And there was this one moment where I think it was Mark Smith stopped the fight, had them both put their mouth guards in, started again. And right after it restarted, Cody Brundage clipped them, dropped them, and landed follow-up punches. And that was that. So that could have played an implication in it. But at the same time, these guys just, they should keep their teeth. Let's not let these two kill each other, especially when there's not a belt on the line. Cody, we know he can fight at middleweight. We know he can fight at welterweight. For this matchup, it was contested at middleweight. I don't know what to do with him. I truly have no idea. Middleweight is such a vast division. There's so many options for him. No one's really coming directly to mind. Someone like Edmund Shabazian, I think, would be a fun fight. I mean, truly, I think that would be a good option right there if I had to match make. But they'll give him another shot. They'll give him another shot. He's 30 years old. He's a good company guy, always taking short notice fights. And when you're getting knockouts like this, you're going to remain in the UFC. Good job. Good job to Cody. 9th career finish in 11 career wins. Hey, that ain't too bad. As for Julian, tough stuff. Tough stuff for Julian Marquez. Good luck. Good luck in whatever future endeavors you do that are not in the UFC. With that, we get into the main event of the evening, the number 6 ranked Menel Kaip taking on the number 8 ranked Asu Almabayev. And I knew this was too big for Asu. I just knew it. Asu Almabayev cracks under the pressure, gets TKO'd in round number 3. Menel Kaip outstrikes him 61-40 significantly for the whole fight. Asu goes 0-6 on takedowns. Round 1, good round from Menel. Round 2, I gave it to Menel, but Asu looked better. And then round 3, Asu Almabayev wanted nowhere to go in there with Menel Kaip. And I saw people were complaining about the finish. I want you all to know, if you didn't see the finish, Asu was running away from Menel Kaip. Okay, he's running away. He's covering up against the cage. I mean, I do not blame the ref at all for stopping him. Zero blame on the ref at all for stopping him. Asumabayev was just showing all the signs of someone who wanted to get out of there, and eventually he did. MLK getting another knockout. Can't even hate on him. 13th career knockout, 18 finishes, and now 21 career victories. MLK is an absolute freaking dog. And he just ended the win streak at 17 for Asumabayev. Two straight round three TKOs. Absolutely love it. And he's also sitting at 6-1 in his UFC career since losing his first two. It's been a good run. Been a good run for Manel Cape. I'm moving him up to 5. I'm having him pass Tatsuro Taera. As for Asu, we'll keep him at 8. They may actually bump Steve Ercik up. I don't think they should, but they might. We'll have to see. For Asumabayev, loser of Moreno and Ercik could be an option. Tagil and Bekov could be a fun one. Like I said, Ramazan Temeryov could be an option. Kaya Sakura. A lot of options for Asumabayev. I think if you're Asu, you just have to maybe take on someone and who's not at the level that Manel Cape is. Because Manel Cape's striking was looking as good as ever in this one. So people are complaining about some eye pokes and stuff. But look, it's MMA. And if you're not covering up right afterwards, if you're not telling the ref about this, the ref should be the one catching it. And I think we had Mike Beltran in there. I'm very trustworthy of Mike Beltran. As for Manel Cape, you know, there's two options here. There's two options. There's either you run back him versus Roy Val, which was originally booked, or you give him the winner of Kaikara France and Pantoa. Now, I think Pantoa's at a level for the men's flyweight division where if he is dethroned, they'll run it back. But especially if he goes out there and beats Kaikara France, which I think he will do with the grappling, him versus Manel Cape will be a great rematch because that first fight around was so boring. It was neither of the guys' best performance. I think if they were to rematch, it would be phenomenal. You're either going to see a number one contender fight between Ravel and Cape, or they're just going to straight up give Cape the title fight. Either way, I'm happy with it. Should be an exciting year for the men's flyweight division. But overall, not too bad. When I go through and I rank fight nights or fight night main events throughout the year, I will remember this one for not being as bad as people say it was. We got a couple finishes here and there. 50K to Mario, 50K to Manel, and a fight of the night to Nasrat and Esteban Ribavix. And we're sitting at the year at 57-28 on predictions. Not too mad about that. Not too mad about that. And by the way, guys, the next time I see you, it'll be UFC 313. Absolutely. It'll be such a good card. Alex Pereira versus Magomed Ankalaev and Justin Gaethje versus Rafael Fiziev. The rematch. A couple of other good ones on there as well. But as for this card, that's all I got. That's all I got for today's episode, ladies and gentlemen. And let me just tell you, Elimination Chamber and Cobra Kai got me so hype. I'm so excited. I got other TV shows to watch. I got Reacher. I got Invincible. I got Ted Lasso. So many other things. And as for WWE, they got WWE every single week of the year. So lots of exciting stuff all around. I'm going to mention this on the next episode, but I will be going on vacation from Sunday, March 9th. Until March, I want to say it's like 5 days. So I'll be coming back on a Thursday. So I don't know what to do about really a recap of UFC 313 because I'm not going to film it while I'm on vacation with my dad. So I think we're just going to do a long, long episode when we get back where I drop my UFC, what's it going to be? UFC Vegas 104, Vittori versus Dolidze predictions, and a recap of UFC 313. So we may be cutting some of the other things we do, but we got one more for you this week, and that's going to be about another full week before we get another episode. But as always, guys, thank you so much for listening. I know I have to do a lot more to grow this podcast, such as recording myself, but you know, it's the format I have right now. And honestly, if I was only about doing this for money, then I wouldn't do this every single week because I actually lose money because I pay to upload all these. So fun fact for all of you listeners out there, but I appreciate you all. I love you all so very much. I encourage you to watch UFC, watch WWE, watch Cobra Kai. So many fun things. Go out there and live the best possible life you can. And when you come back, I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.